Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Out on the practice field today, everybody wants to know, how's Levis looking? What about this player? What about that player? How's the offense coming along, the passing game, the new offense with the coach, the two running backs? And let me say this. There has been one common theme every day that I have been on the practice field this season, which it's now what? Six practices I've been to so far of like the eight that they've had. And there is a one consistent every day. I'm sorry, I'm distracted by the synchronized swimming team that's up here. What country is this? Who are these synchronized swimmers? Spain. Oh, Spain. Man, and I thought I loved Canada, but I might, Spain. Woof. Anywho, so the one constant at practice so far, it's Tavondre Sweat. Another day of practice and another day of Tavondre Sweat being a freaking monster out there on the defensive line. Every single day. And I try not to get too excited. I really, really, really want to be hesitant about getting excited about what I've seen out of Tavondre Sweat. Because as we've talked about hundreds of times, there's always this issue that we have in training camp with differentiating good offense, bad defense. Good defense, bad offense. Again, Arden Key versus Andre Dillard is a perfect example of this. Last year, Arden Key owned Andre Dillard every single day at practice. Mike Vrabel told everybody it was because Arden Key was good, when in the reality, it was because Andre Dillard was bad. The first day of Packers practice, Rashawn Gary had 5 sacks against Andre Dillard. And somebody tweeted out the video and said, Rashawn Gary's going to be a monster this year. And I said, with all due respect, that probably did not have much to do with Rashawn Gary, if I had to guess. So I am always hesitant about getting excited about something good that's happening at training camp, because once again, it could just mean bad offense. But he's a monster. And he was a monster again today. They literally cannot run the ball with him in there. At one point, they ran the ball away from Sweat, and Sweat chased the running back down from behind at 370 pounds, chasing down an NFL running back. Now, there are still questions when it comes to Tavondre Sweat. Just on the field. You know, forget about the red flags and the off the field. I mean, that's always going to be a thing, no matter how much Chris Sanders wants to pretend that just because he's shown up for 3 weeks of practice, that it means that he's going to be a model citizen for 30 years. But there are on-field questions. For instance, today, the offense got in a second and long, and Sweat came off the field. They picked up a nice little chunk, and then it was third and medium, and Sweat was still off the field, and the offense converted a first down. Can Sweat be on the field on second and 13 when you know they're going to pass the ball? And that means, can he get to the quarterback? Now, he's gotten to the quarterback some in camp, but I don't know if those situations were those pure pass rushing situations, which, once again, when you draft a guy with the 38th pick, he's got to be able to get to the quarterback. And as I said many times, he's got to be able to play in the fourth quarter when the game is on the line. But so far, so good. TD came up to me after practice today. He said, what'd you think of Sweat? I said, he's a freaking monster. I said, did you see him run down the running back? And the only videos that you guys will see on Twitter are the one-on-ones. Because here's what you're allowed to see. Here's what is allowed to hit the internet. Now, if the Titans post something, that's different. Because that's gone through the 87 channels of approval in order to get the check mark to put it out there on social media. But if you see something from TD or Paul or Corey Curtis or Jim Wyatt or Johnny Joe or whoever, if you see that, what it is it's the stretching period, the warm-up. It's the individual period where, again, the receivers go with the receivers, running backs go with the running backs, defensive line, offensive line, like everybody's kind of by themselves, or it's one-on-ones. It's, you know, DB versus wide receiver. And they're very careful about what gets put out there because, again, they don't want anybody to see anything that they're not supposed to see, anything scheme-related. So when you guys see Tavondre Sweat, all you're seeing is him dominating in a one-on-one against Lloyd Cushenberry, again, the third highest paid center in the NFL, but you're watching a one-on-one. That's it. When you see Tavondre Sweat in the team period, he feels to me like the best player on the team. And I get a lot of this where, like, I asked Brian Callahan about it the other day about how much he feels running the offense, how much he feels Tavondre Sweat, and he talked about, oh, I feel it. You know, his size and his athleticism and his ability to get to the quarterback. And between him and Jeff, I mean, they are. I think Sweat in practice has had a bigger impact than Simmons. Now, I don't have the same questions with Simmons. I know Simmons plays on 3rd and 13. I know Simmons plays in the 2-minute drill. And I know Sweat and Simmons are not going to play every single snap every game. In fact, the Titans tried that in 2020. Vrabel and Shane Bowen had absolutely no depth, so Landry and Simmons played every play, and they were both significantly ineffective because of how much they were playing. So I'm not arguing that Sweat needs to play every play. I'm not arguing that Simmons needs to play every play. I'm not arguing any of that. But I'm just telling you, if Tavondre Sweat can play as much as Danico Autry played, so if he can play, again, 2nd and 7, but he's got his gas, he can play. If he can play in the fourth quarter, if he can make it through at 370 pounds, if he can make it through an entire game, and in the fourth quarter, still have enough gas in the tank to be able to go get after Caleb Williams week one, go get after Aaron Rodgers week two, if he can do that, he's got the potential to be really special. I mean, he is a big mamma jamma. And I'm trying to think in my head because he feels like, and again, it's practice. And again, in practice, it could just be bad offense. I hope it's not, but we have to admit that that's the... But when we talk about players that weigh as much as Tavondre Sweat weighs, for the most part, it's a pure nose tackle. It's Ted Washington. It's Sam Adams. It's Vince Wilfork. It's these 360-pounders that look like the size of a couch. And they go out there and they stop the run and pick up about a sack and a half a year. Well, the Titans are convinced, just based off of some of the things that they say, the Titans are convinced that Tavondre Sweat is more than that. Now, Tavondre Sweat only had a couple of sacks last year out at Texas. But they say, well, he opened things up for Byron Murphy, and that's great. But this is the NFL. So I want him to get the sacks. The way defensive linemen get paid in the NFL is by getting the sacks. But this guy, I'd be lying to you if I said that I didn't see him play every single practice and I didn't say, my God, there goes Tavondre Sweat again. I'm not one of these guys who's going to sit here and, you know, talk and discuss. And to me, I'm not disappointed in the fact that we discussed every day about whether or not the Titans reached. We had people, credible people, saying, I had him in the fourth round. We had former GM saying, oh, no, you do not take him there. So we discussed it. They had guys off the record that were saying things like, yeah, we took him off the board because he's got all the issues and we wanted to make sure. And so that did happen. And so we questioned it. But through 3 weeks of practice, Tavondre Sweat looks like he's worth Brian Callahan, Rand Carthon, Tracy Rocker going and getting on a plane and going down to Texas and sitting down with mom and sitting down with grandma and sitting down and saying, please, for the love of God, can you be a pro? Yes. Okay. He said yes. He's looked the part. I mean, he really has. It would not surprise me if midway through the year, we're talking about Tavondre Sweat as the most impactful player on the defense. Now, he's probably not going to be as good as L'Jarius Sneed, and Simmons is still, right now, the best player in the defense. But I can't get enough. Tavondre Sweat, every single practice. If Treylon Burks did every day in practice what Tavondre Sweat does, oh my God, it would be just nauseating how much people would talk about it. That's how good Sweat's been. And I'm just telling it like I see it, which is Sweat right now is a difference maker at 370 pounds. 615-737-1025. He is one of those dudes that you recognize right away when you're watching, again, the team period, like the real scrimmaging like they did today. And it's like, damn. The same way that I feel about this Canadian synchronized swimming team, I look at them and I think, damn. That's how I feel about Tavondre Sweat. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. So Chris Sanders said something pretty stupid today about Tavondre Sweat, but I would say that so far, so good on the red flags, and I almost wonder if the narrative about Sweat might actually be the other way around. I'll explain what I mean by that. We'll do it next. Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063 The Game. What did you think about the big boy Tavondre Sweat when you were out there on Saturday?
He's a stinking dog. Hey, can we take the red flags away now?
No.
Why?
Because it's been three weeks.
Why? He took Cushenberry and ran through his lips.
I mean, look, I mean, never said he couldn't play football. Now, but there's a couple things I'm worried about. The drinking and driving, the partying, the weight, that stuff.
Jared, I agree with you. Yeah, he did that. But if he's doing it now, then I can say, okay, he's a fool. But he made a stupid mistake in college. Now he learned from it. Now he's a pro, and he's got a lot of people depending on him. You know what I'm saying? And I agree with you. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I respect what you're saying. But everybody's made a lot of mistakes. He made a mistake in college. Now he can learn from it. Now, if he goes and does it again, then that's his fault. But watching what I see, watching what I hear the coaches say, watching how I respond, watch how TD just told me something. I just talked to him a minute ago. And TD, I'm not trying to steal your thunder. He said that Sweat rushed the quarterback and Levis ran the ball down the field. No, he threw it to Pollard, and Pollard ran down the field. Sweat was running along with him to act like he was going to make the tackle. That just shows you that he cares. It shows you the professionalism that I want to be great. But why? I want to make sure my team trusts me and my coach teaching me. That's why, you know, I'm not going to give him red flags. I think he's going to be able to do it.
Chris Sanders says, can we get rid of the red flags after 3 weeks of camp because he's looked good? No. Well, like, no. Those red flags are real. Now, look. Red flags usually mean there's a problem. Usually mean there's a problem and it's going to come to fruition. And sometimes a guy has red flags and everybody says, well, you know, he's got character issues and so and not the... And the guy ends up being Mother Teresa. Doesn't happen very often, but it does happen sometimes. But I would say this. I was thinking about all the talk that surrounded Tavondre Sweat when he got drafted. And again, the DWI, Tavondre Sweat, I think it was somebody said, I can't remember who. It might have been Charles Robinson. Somebody said, you know, Tavondre Sweat swore up and down to teams and scouts and said, guys, the maturity questions, the reputation that I have at Texas about being too much of a partier, too much of a class clown, too much of that, it is so overblown. I am a pro. I am ready to go. It will be fine. Don't worry about it. And so teams were sitting there in their war rooms before the draft at their meeting saying, well, you know, he says he's moved past that. Do we think he's moved past that? I don't know. And then, bam, he gets a DWI. And I did laugh when Rand Carthon was like, and he came in and didn't even try to use the excuse that it was his car that got hit, not him hitting somebody else's car, to which I said, it sounds like you're trying to use that excuse that it hit his car and not him hitting somebody with his car. He got a DWI. It is what it is. So the red flags still exist, but I've thought about this. After watching Jeffrey Simmons over the last 2 weeks and watching Tavondre Sweat over the last 3 months, are we sure that all the talk when Sweat got drafted was he needs to go sit down right next to Big Jeff and he needs to take a page out of Big Jeff's book and he needs to look up to Big Jeff and he needs to sit down with Big Jeff and he needs to be mentored by Big Jeff and everything Big Jeff farts, he needs to fart out of his ass too? Maybe it should be the other way around. Because there was a lot of talk about Big Boy, Tavondre Sweat. And it didn't just come from this show. Sure, I've talked about it a lot. Because every week after the draft, there was another report about a team being like, yeah, no, we're not going to take this guy. And there was that GM. What I can't shake is there was a GM, an unnamed general manager, in The Athletic who told Mike Sando, this guy's going to break your heart. And if Tavondre Sweat ends up succumbing to the red flags and not becoming a star after what I've seen through the first 3 weeks of practice, that is going to be depressing. Like, that's going to be disappointing. But again, all the talk about Sweat. Sweat got drafted. Daniel Jeremiah on the NFL Network broadcast said, this is a controversial pick. Sweat got drafted. Rick Spielman killed the Titans over it. The Athletic killed the Titans over it. Outside of one NFC scout saying, yeah, I think he would have gone in the second round, every single thing said about Sweat was negative. Did you hear Tavondre Sweat lash out at any of it? Did you hear Tavondre Sweat at rookie minicamp? He was asked about his weight, took all the questions. Did you, outside, Tavondre Sweat didn't make it through OTAs. Massive concern. Everybody was talking about it. Did you see Tavondre Sweat get on social media and cry like a baby, like Jeffrey Simmons? The guys that cover our team are too mean to us. No. All Tavondre Sweat did was get his tush in shape and show up and pass the conditioning test and get his butt on the field. And so far, it is impossible not to notice him on the football field right now. Again, other than Snead, and again, we don't know about Snead's needs, he might be the best player on the defense at the end of the season. That's how good he's been in practice. So all this talk was, hey, Sweat needs to learn from Big Jeff. Maybe it should be the other way around. Big Jeff gets mad about what Buck says. Big Jeff gets mad about what Paul says. Big Jeff gets mad about what I say. I'm blocked on Twitter by Big Jeff, which is fine. That's his business, not mine. I don't know when it happened. All I know is Caroline sent me a text with a tweet of his when he signed his contract extension, and I could see the preview in the text message from Caroline, so I clicked it. Like, I could see the tweet in the text, and then I clicked it, and it was like, yeah, you're blocked from viewing this person's tweets. I don't know what happened. I don't care. To me, it's not as bad as Jerry Stackhouse blocking everybody when, A, I didn't really say anything bad about Jerry Stackhouse, and B, he's the coach. Simmons is entitled to do whatever he wants. But even then, I sent out a tweet saying he was soft when everybody, when he got mad at the media trying to be our friends over the Jamal Adams thing. And he goes on the other radio station and he's like, yeah, I heard somebody in the local media said I was soft. Ha, I bet he wouldn't say that to my face. Which, by the way, I didn't even hear that. And I did ask Simmons, what was the thing you said? What'd you mean about that? And then Simmons didn't answer the question because Simmons might be a little sensitive there when it comes to that kind of stuff. Sweat hasn't uttered a peep. Sweat has been the model citizen of how to deal with the criticism, block out the noise, and just get to work. So maybe it should have been the other way around. 615-737-1025. One texter says, I do not care about character and nice guys. Get some dogs that can beat their guy on Sunday. Enough of that in Titans history. He sucks, but he is such a great guy. Ray Lewis, red flags. Randy Moss, red flags. Jeffrey Simmons, red flags. That's what loser front offices say so the fan base doesn't fire them for passing on great players. I'll give you one name. Pac-Man Jones. We only want good players, Jared. We don't care if they're good people. Okay. Pac-Man was awesome. When Pac-Man got suspended and the Titans were on the upswing because Vince Young had become the starting quarterback and they went from being terrible and potentially the number one or two pick in the next year's draft to all of a sudden competing for a playoff spot at the end of the year. And when that happened, Pac-Man was the best player on the team. He was electric as a kick returner. He was a number one corner. He was the best player on the team. But when the commissioner suspends you for a year, it doesn't really matter. And then the Titans moved on from Pac-Man, and Pac-Man played like 16 years in the league. Pac-Man was every bit worth the fifth or sixth pick or whatever he was in 2005. Pac-Man was worth that pick. But red flags. So you can say that all you want and say, oh, no, I only want the good players. I don't want the guys who are right. Now, personally, I don't want to root for Tyreek Hill. Now, there is nothing that Tavondre Sweat did that is in any shape the equivalent of what Tyreek Hill did. But I don't want to root for that. Now, when it comes to Sweat, I can get over. Guy got a DUI. Okay. I don't think it's a good thing that he got it when he was telling everybody that he promised that he had grown up a little bit. But fine, whatever. But let me just say this. So far, so good. And we'll see. But again, to act like, okay, the jury has returned, it's a little too early for that. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. I do want to tell you about Twice Daily. I love Twice Daily. They're all over the city. I go to Twice Daily all the time. I've got a Twice Daily in my neighborhood, and you can, if you want to find me in public, go see me at Twice Daily. And the reason it's called Twice Daily is because people like me go there twice daily. You can grab a coffee in the morning and come back for an afternoon snack. Or even if you're on the go, get a sandwich, get a wrap, get a burrito, get a pizza, and they can make it for you right there. These snacks are the real deal, made to order, and you can get a huge warm pretzel and dip, a three-piece chicken tender snack, or spicy boneless chicken wings and more. You can order in-store or like I do on the Twice Daily app. All fresh, tasty, and priced just right for you and your budget. It pays to be a member with Twice Daily, where you'll earn points and save money on every visit. If you're looking for convenience, Twice Daily has you covered. That's Twice Daily.
You notice Sweat much out there across the line of scrimmage from you?
We know where he's at. He's not hard to miss. But he does a great job giving those guys good looks up there and working them. Our guys are getting better in the strong or in the run game and the pass game from holding his from him up. So. He's been a good player for us, and I'm proud of how he's come out here and handled his rookie season so far.
That was Will Levis, and it's funny because these guys are so competitive that, like, Will Levis doesn't want to say, hey, Tavondre Sweat is kicking ass in practice. He's like, yeah, you know, he's been a good player, and we felt him and Jeff, and yeah, that's good. You know, it's fine one way, you know. But really proud of how he's handled his business, i.e. not gotten in trouble. 615-737-1025. Ian, do you have a thought, or do you want to go to the phones?
To the phones.
Phone line is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. One texter says, didn't Big Jeff also have big red flags out of the draft? Maybe he's the perfect influence on Sweat under these circumstances. Again, I don't think that Big Jeff is the Tavondre Sweat mentor. I think that they go about their business independently. And Jeff's red flags, Jeff Here's the problem with Jeff. And I think we all now know it. Jeff's got a little bit of a temper. That's it. Got a little bit of a temper. Maybe needs a little bit thicker skin. And that got him in trouble in high school with the video and the women and all that kind of stuff. And then he had a torn ACL. That's not really a red flag. That's kind of a medical issue. Sweat was more, he's too much of a class clown. He doesn't take football seriously. He's immature. He loves to party. He's a little too fat. And he tells the teams, no, I'm serious about the NFL. And then he goes out and he gets a DWI after he tells all the scouts, no, I promise I'll be better. That's tough. But so far, he's been the most consistent player, in my opinion, in training camp. I've noticed him every day. Jason Fitz joins us now on the program, Yahoo Sports, Fox Sports Radio. Fitz, let's start here on Tavondre Sweat. Every single day I've been at practice, I have been wowed by this just massive beast of a defensive tackle. I'm still not sure if he can rush the passer in passing downs or play in a two-minute drill, but at 370 pounds, he is an absolute difference maker out there in practice. How much of a grain of salt, in your opinion, should I take on this because it's practice?
None. What you just said was the biggest knock on Tavondre coming in. You know, and that's the reason that he plummeted on so many draft boards, is that there are people that questioned his focus. There are people that questioned, you know, his commitment. There are people that questioned whether or not he has that dog in him to want to play the game because he made some stupid decisions. And, you know, what happens, and this is just unfair, but it's the way the world works. You know this, but, like, what happens is when you make stupid decisions around the NFL draft, instead of somebody looking at it and saying, wow, that was a dumb decision for a kid to make, they look at it and say, you had your whole life in front of you. Right then, you knew exactly what you could and couldn't do, and you couldn't handle it. And if you can't handle that moment, how can I trust you to handle moments once you're in the league? And that's a real thing from inside the league. I think Tavondre is somebody that, had he not had the disaster that he had from that personal stuff coming into it, I think he would have been drafted much higher. So I'm not surprised at all he's dominating. I'm not surprised at all that he's great in practice. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he becomes one of the focal points of this team moving forward. He's just got to make sure that he keeps that focus on the main thing. You know, like guys always say, you got to keep the main thing. I think that's real when you wake up one day and you're rich and you're in the NFL. Like, there are people in league circles that question whether or not he is wired to be able to handle that. I think if he can come in, if he's dominating practice and that turns into dominating games, I wouldn't be surprised at all.
How much, when it comes to Tavondre Sweat, do you think, had he not had the off-the-field stuff, the DWI, the partying, where do you think he ends up? Outland Trophy winner, but he's not a huge sacker. Where do you think he ends up in the draft? He ends up going 38th, and there were a lot of people that were like, that might be too high for a guy that doesn't sack the quarterback. So far, he's been the best player on the defense in camp. Where do you think he goes? If, let's just say, he has grown up, what do you think he's worth?
I was told going into last college season that he was going to be a top 10 pick. Like, that's real.
Wow.
Going into the college season last year, it was top 10, maybe 15, because he isn't a sack monster, but he's such a huge human being. And there's value for that in so many different defenses. But it's not even just the partying and the DWI. There's also just some of the people around the program. The words that were coming around about him were that he's just not focused on being an adult. And I know that's super harsh to say, and I'm not trying to be harsh to the kid because I don't know him. But those were the things that people were saying, and that's just a hard thing to shake. If none of that exists, he's picked in the top 15 of the draft, absolutely 100%. Frankly, if none of that had existed, I would have been surprised if he made it past the Raiders at 13 at that point. Like, that, there was a real consensus that he can absolutely dominate. So, you know, I know some teams, frankly, took him off their draft board because they weren't sure that he could handle life in that city. That's not something that the Titans were worried about. So that's not something that locker room is worried about. I think the Titans got a huge value on that.
Jason Fitz is with us here on the program. What do you make of all the Brandon Ayuk drama that's been going down?
It's more complicated than anybody wants it to be. In fact, I was just talking to one of our NFL reporters at Yahoo about this because she talked to his agent for an hour today. And I think what we have to remember is that both Brandon Ayuk and the 49ers have to agree on anything. So when we hear that, well, there was a trade agreed on in principle, now it doesn't really work that way, because the 49ers are going to have to say yes, and Ayuk's going to have to say yes. And the very few locations that he could even want to go to may not have what the 49ers want to get back in return. Keep in mind that, you know, San Francisco's in win-now mode, right? So I don't have a hard time with the fact that they didn't make this trade months ago, because, frankly, I think they've been trying to salvage this so that they can have a shot at the Super Bowl this year. So I think what they want in return is not just draft capital. They want somebody that can come in right now and begin to be a huge part of how they try and win the Super Bowl today. And Ayuk doesn't want to go to a team that's suddenly going to stink, and he wants to be paid huge market value. So I think right now, somebody told me a couple hours ago that they still think there's a 60% chance that he ends up in San Francisco. I think it's even higher than that. I think this is all just everybody yelling, and at the end of the day, there won't be a deal that makes everybody happy.
So here's what I don't get. Clearly, Ayuk only cares about the money, right? Because he wanted to go to Washington. And who wants to leave San Francisco to go to Washington if it's not about the money? And yet the Patriots reportedly, and I say that and I mean it in all caps and bold because I don't know what the truth is, but reportedly the Patriots had a deal in place with the 49ers and they offered him the most money and he still didn't want to take it. So does he care about the money? Is it about more than the money? Or is he just trying to bitch his way to the Steelers, which is kind of what it looks like?
No, I think, frankly, there are players in the league right now that think that New England's about to become sort of the Siberia of the NFL. I know what you're saying about Washington, but players are excited about Jaden Daniels. Players, frankly, they like Quinn. Players are looking at a new ownership group and saying, hey, maybe this isn't the worst.
Really?
I don't talk to – yes. Yeah, 100%. Like, I haven't talked to anybody around the league or within the league or players that feel like New England is a place you want to go. I think that's one of the biggest parts of that story is that, frankly, it shows how far the Patriots have fallen. They've become sort of this place that people don't want to be. They just don't. So do I think it's about – you know, obviously money is the biggest driver here in a lot of ways, but also – I mean, if you want to go from a team that right now many people have as the best in the NFL to a team that most people have as the worst in the NFL, I would be pretty surprised if the Patriots aren't a top three pick in next year's draft. Why would Ayuk want to go there if he thinks he can get comparable money to go play somewhere else that's at least more solidified? Like, I don't even know what your future looks like if you go to New England. To me, the Patriots have become the place that you have to overpay, and it's where your career goes to die right now.
What do you make of all the Jim Harbaugh Michigan drama now that he's not there anymore?
I do think it's interesting, though. The NFL does have the right, if they want to come in and say, you can't just use us. Like, there was some conversation about Tressel a few years ago. They did some of that with look, Harbaugh coming out and being loud and obnoxious about all of this is just typical Harbaugh. Like, the guy, and I've spent a pretty good amount of time over the last few years around and interviewing him and talking to Harbaugh, and like everything in his response is the thing that makes some people's skin crawl about Harbaugh. But the other side of it is, you know, a hamburger causing a cause punishment, it to me was pretty surprising. I mean, that's a pretty surprising development, but it tells you that the NCAA is wildly convinced that he just flat out lied. And I don't think we're done either. Like, I think the NCAA is going to keep looking into everything they can around Michigan. So this story, while it may not be impacting Harbaugh, is going to impact the Michigan football team for the next several years.
So, look, full disclosure, I'm friends with Sharon Moore. I've known him for about a decade. I think he's a really, really good man. Did he cheat? Awesome. I don't know. It sounds like they were cheating. I thought they cheated last year. Here's my take on the whole Michigan thing, Fitz. You had your opportunity to do something about it last year, and you let him win the championship. And anything after that, I don't care anymore. I don't care. We all knew they did it. We all knew they cheated. We all knew they got the signs. We all know that that's not common practice, nor is it permissible. We know they had an entire network of doing this. The proof was right there. The guy was on Central Michigan's sideline. And other than suspending Harbaugh for a couple games, they didn't do anything to Michigan. So to me, they won the title, case closed, the end, and I've moved on. Is that wrong?
I don't know that it's wrong, but if I'm the NCAA, I also had to look at it and say, my God, even if we try and litigate this right now, it's going to turn into a litigation nightmare. It's going to be over and over and over again, whereas we could just wait and then, do it afterwards, and maybe Michigan just accepts it a little easier. Maybe Harbaugh's not involved with it. Maybe it's not our problem. I don't think you're wrong, but also, if Michigan cheated, Michigan has to be punished. Like, I'm not even talking about Harbaugh. Like, Michigan has to be punished at this point. So there has to be some penalty for, yeah, we broke the rules. Like, it may not matter to you today, but if that's the case, then you've just basically opened up a world where every single coach can just go out and do whatever they want every time and then just go take another job. Schools will be happy. Like, I think there has to be some element of this in punishment in the general in the NCAA. I wish punishments always followed coaches, and I wish punishments always followed programs, so they can't just go their separate ways and get out of ever paying the piper. Otherwise, you know, my God, it's already the wild, wild west. How wild do we want it to get out there?
Jason Fitz with us, Yahoo Sports, Fox Sports Radio. Am I a bad American? I haven't really gotten into the Olympics. I mean, I watched Noah Lyles. I thought that was very exciting. You know, I watched him run the 100 and win by a foot, and then I watched him, you know, win the 200 the next day. I mean, if it's on, I'll watch, but basketball was on yesterday, whatever. Women's basketball without Caitlin Clark was on today, whatever. I mean, I'd much rather watch the thong bikinis and the synchronized swimming than any of the other. Am I a bad American?
No, I honestly, you echo the sentiment of a lot. Like, one of the things I'm doing for Yahoo right now is Olympic recap videos, and I think we've seen it in the numbers. We've seen it, you know, sort of in the overall engagement. Like, it feels like the first 4 or 5 days of the Olympics, everybody was on fire for it, and now it just sort of feels like everybody's a little bit past it. I'm going to be honest with you. I got Bar Rescue on in the back of my TV muted right now. Like, I just need a little break from it, you know? I think it's just a lot, man, and it's hard.
You do know
for me.
Synchronized swimming is on right now, right?
Well, I mean, it was on this morning.
I'll tell you right now, I mean, Spain, I'm a big fan of their team. I don't know. Canada, I'm a big fan of their team. China, not so much. But, I mean, I tell you, synchronized swimming, if I was going to skip out on the Olympics, it wouldn't be for synchronized swimming, that's for sure.
I love that about you. That's amazing for you.
Thank you.
But there's just too many events now. Like, look, the fact that the breakdancing is an Olympic sport this year just kind of makes me mad. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I just – where's the line on this? And I'm supposed to get into some of this stuff? I don't know. Like, so, but synchronized swimming, I may have to change the channel for. But I'm watching all the equestrian stuff, and I don't know, man. It just doesn't move my soul. It just doesn't move my soul.
Jason Fitz, as always on the program, Fitz, we appreciate you. Last one for you. I actually want to squeeze this in there. This time next week, where is Brandon Ayuk?
I think Brandon Ayuk is a San Francisco 49er, and I think the first game of this year. He plays, I don't think it's week one, but I think he'll play the first game of the year that he plays as a San Francisco 49er.
Nah, he'll be a Steeler. Fitz, as always, great stuff. We appreciate you.
Appreciate you, brother. Have a great week.
Yep, Jason Fitz joining us on the program. So the Patriots couldn't land Brandon Ayuk. Remember, they tried to land Calvin Ridley, and they couldn't get him either. Now he's saying, oh, players don't want to go there because it's Siberia. I did live a winter up there, and it was miserable. And I liked the people up there, and I liked living up there, but my God, was the snow too much for me. Coming up next, I feel completely vindicated by something that I don't think I lost Jared versus Joe on a couple weeks ago, but I know was certainly debated. And now the Titans aren't even hiding it. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Brian talked about, and when he met with us this morning, about how he had showed you and Calvin a bunch of the cut-ups on go balls and things like that of, you know, receivers and quarterbacks from years past. What kind of things did you take from that little session?
I think just the timing, like really understanding the timing of the throw, trusting it. I think, like, sometimes when I'm rearing up and I know I'm going to throw a go ball, it's comfortable for me to, like, almost put all of my arm into it, and that could be, you know, like a 50, 55 plus yard down the field throw. But looking at the statistics and like where a go ball is typically caught, it might not be that long most of the time. So if you're really trusting it, instead of taking the three hitch hold and throwing it, you know, as far as you can, understanding that there could be a different timing to it, and being comfortable with maybe not throwing it 100%, taking a little off of it, but we'll continue to work through it. It was good to connect them once a day, but yeah, it's gonna have to be a, you know, part of our offense that we're gonna be good at.
That was Will Levis talking about airing it out, throwing the deep ball specifically to Calvin Ridley. And there has been a lot of talk the last couple of days about the Titans throwing the ball down the field to Calvin Ridley. Today, Levis had time, a nice pocket, and threw one 50, 40 yards down the field, however far you want to say it went, 40, 50 yards, and threw it in stride to Ridley in the bucket over Trey Avery for a big 40, 50-yard gain. I mean, they hit a bomb today in practice. Well, there was a lot of talk before practice when Brian Callahan had his 8 a.m. press conference about, hey, Levis and Ridley, they got to get on time with the throwing the bomb. And they talked about it on NFL Network about them throwing the bomb. And Levis today even talked about the frustration they've had with them throwing the bomb. Here's what he said.
Look at the back shoulder, look at the deep pass. Like, what does a day like today with all these connections with Ridley, like, what does that do for the chemistry and confidence?
Those are just a couple types of connections we haven't really been able to hit too consistently here during camp. So that was definitely great for the confidence. I'm getting more and more comfortable with him every single day. Hitting the deep one down the red line was one we've been working on. And to get it in sync, getting in rhythm, I'm excited to watch the tape. And I think it's going to look exactly like we drew it up. So that's what you love. And you got to make plays like the back shoulder and have a feel for that. And so to get those reps are really valuable. And I know that we're going to have to make plays like that if this team wants to be successful.
We're going to have to throw the ball down the field to Calvin Ridley if this team's going to be successful. Ian, how many weeks ago was it on the Jared versus Joe program that Joe and I got into it and somehow it turned into a tangent about whether or not Calvin Ridley was going to be the deep ball guy for this team?
It was either last week or the week before.
And I don't think that Joe lost that week one way or another. I don't know.
I think he's won the last two.
But Joe was, oh, no, Calvin Ridley, he's not the deep ball guy. You don't know what you're talking about. And yet here's the coach saying this morning, yeah, we need them to get in sync on the deep ball. And here they are in practice working on the deep ball. And here it is, 3 weeks into practice, they finally hit one. And the quarterback's like, yeah, I can't wait to watch tape. Hope it looks as good as we drew it up. You know, we got to keep working on it. It was good to get that one in there today. Because Calvin Ridley is the big play receiver. Because when they signed Calvin Ridley for the money they signed him to, I said, this is for the guy that they need to get to run. He's the guy that goes deep. Boyd's in the slot. He's short. DeAndre is kind of the combat catch. You know, you can throw it deep. You can throw it short. You can throw it intermediate. DeAndre's kind of the do-it-all. Ridley is the deep ball guy. And Joe was like, no, no, he wasn't. Even though most of his touchdowns in Jacksonville came by them throwing the ball deep. And so I'm watching him in camp work through this, trying to throw the football over the top. How many times has Chris Sanders come on this program over the last 5 years and talked about the need to take the top off the defense? The Titans need a guy that scares other teams that, hey, Levis might air one out. Levis needs a guy who can run down the field so that he can use his biggest strength, throwing it 60 yards in stride with a flick of the wrist to his advantage. So, of course, if they spent $23 million a year on a receiver, it's so that they could throw the ball deep. No, no, no. Even though he was a 4.48 coming out. No, no, no. And yet, I hope that that's enough evidence between the coach talking about it on NFL Network over the weekend, between the coach talking about it this morning, between them doing it today, between Levis talking about it multiple times. I hope that's enough evidence for everybody to realize they need Calvin Ridley to be the big play receiver. They need him to be the high average per catch guy. Don't expect 11 targets for Ridley. They need Ridley to catch about 10 balls this season for about 50 apiece. Now, I'm not sure that's going to happen, but that's what they need. And if Ridley can't be the deep ball guy, then it was a waste of money. But I'm convinced that Brian Callahan and Will Levis and Calvin Ridley and everybody else sees it the way I see it and not the way Joe sees it. 615-737-1025. Speaking of Joe, it is 5 o'clock, or it's about to be 5 o'clock. which means it's time to debate Jared versus Joe. And we will do that next training camp edition of Jared versus Joe, who wasn't even really watching practice today until I told him to get off his tush and watch practice.
What would we do without you?
I tell you, I don't know. Get half off to this family-owned Chicago restaurant right here in Nashville. Winners of numerous Best of Awards. This is truly one of the best-kept secrets in Nashville. Staley's Chicago Italian Dining brings amazing Italian food to the South, including original Italian beef sandwiches, Vienna Chicago-style hot dogs, and the best Euros south of Chicago. Head to thegamenashville.com/deals now to get half off a $20 gift card while supplies last.